This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. Enterprise. FM 89.9.
It's time to race again. Frida Liu here, Roshan Tiran from Leadonomics, sitting in front of me talking about leadership lessons from Stephen Hawking. First, welcome to the new office, new studio anyway. So we're talking about Stephen Hawking. Why Stephen Hawking?
It's very interesting because 1963, right? This guy, Stephen Hawking, one of the world's greatest scientists, and at this time, at the age of 21, he was told that he had just 2 years to live because he had this form of motor neuron disease, MND, something which my old coach, Mokhtar Dari, had, I think, something similar. So he was diagnosed with this MND, and he was a final year student, undergrad student at Oxford. He also started to become very clumsy, and his family noticed that his speech started to become very slurred. And after a number of medical investigations, they revealed that he actually had this thing called ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
ALS.
ALS, yeah, I think that's easier to... And basically, it's basically life-threatening. Like, essentially, you have a very bleak prognosis of in terms of life expectancy. So this guy, I mean, even though, in spite of that, right, he somehow survived and lived till 2018. He just passed away recently, earlier part of this year.
Right.
And he made some interesting contributions, very, very important contributions to gravitational theory, cosmology, quantum theory, thermodynamics. And essentially, he would defy medical opinion, and he'll live this extraordinary life for another 55 years. So here's a guy who's been diagnosed for 2 years, but he lived for another 55 years. So Stephen Hawking, born in 1942, Oxford, England, January the 8th. In fact, he was born on the 300th anniversary of Galileo's death. So, and he died on March 14, which happened to also be the same day that Albert Einstein was born. So it's quite interesting when you look at all the
read
signs.
The stars and
yeah, exactly. And he turned out to be somebody who looked at the stars a lot,
And he lived 76,
Exactly, yeah. And his father was a medical researcher. He wanted his son to actually follow him into the medical profession. But he was into stars, So again, we talk about stars, but he was preoccupied with the stars and the universe. So
much has been said about his childhood where he was supposedly lazy. Was this true?
Yeah, no, you see, at school, he was recognized as a bright student, but he had this very lazy approach to studies. And he was ranked third from bottom in his class. And in 1979, he would become, how that has transferred, because in 1979, he would become the sixth Lucian Professor of Mathematics at Cambridge University. It's often regarded as the most prestigious chair in science. The first one to hold that chair, Sir Isaac Newton. Mm. So it was.
I'm surprised he's not Sir Stephen Hawking.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, right. maybe it might come, But it's very interesting because he was very lazy, but actually what triggered him was this whole diagnosis that happened in the age of 21. This disability actually became a blessing in disguise. So to some extent, right, before the diagnosis, he invested very little time in studies. He self-confessed that it was not more than an hour each day, and he preferred to enjoy the pleasures of life. There's a great movie on him, and you can watch some of the things that he did prior to this. And he says this, and one of his quotes is this: "Before my condition was diagnosed, I had been very bored with life. There had not seemed to be anything worth doing." And then he had this diagnosis, as I mentioned, when he's 21, right? And this was a wake-up call. And he thought he had 2 years to live. He really thought he had such a short time. He said, in 2 years, what can I do? What kind of legacy can I leave? And he really devoted his whole energy to finishing his PhD and trying to figure out how he can do something significant for the world, and devoted himself to research. And I was thinking about this many times in life, right? We are like that, right? When we know time is limited, we have a deadline, or we're like, I only have 2 weeks to make this happen, or worst case, right? Your life, we've got so many cases of friends now getting cancer and so on and so forth, right? When you know like your life is about to waste away, right? You start to treasure it, and you start to say, what's my priorities? What do I need to really put in front of me? And instead of waiting until that moment, until that that diagnosis comes by, you know, or that the certain right. saga. You know, we should be always telling us each day, today's a gift, right? How do I make full use of it? How do I look at the life that I, what kind of legacy do I want? Be very clear, right? Have clarity of what do I want to do in life? Mm. What do I want to achieve? And what must I do to achieve this? And go about doing this, right?
And one of the things that, you know, sometimes people say, well, come, you're always so busy and everything. But I find that I enjoy doing all these things. And I know that there is a deadline. Yeah, there yeah, is a yeah, deadline,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And how much can you fill into this life
Absolutely.
That you've been given? And yeah. I'm not looking at it in a bleak way, but Absolutely. Just how much life
right.
do you put back into your life?
And you don't need to wait for that trigger
right?
for you to be activated, right?
I've been triggered already. So,
you had your triggers. We all have our
triggers, right? So how did Hawking end up not being able to speak?
Yeah, so it's very interesting, right? Because one is, you know, he's got muscle or what we call MND.
Yep, right.
And then the speech is something different. So in 85, right, 1985, he caught pneumonia. And this somehow led him to receiving a life-saving procedure. They call it a tracheotomy. You know, unfortunately, because of this procedure, he was unable to speak and he could never speak again. And they created, at that time, there was this technology called the Equalizer Program, you know, which with a voice synthesizer allowed him to communicate in this distinctively computer-generated voice.
We
so when you watch a bar, you know, you watch Stephen Hawking, you see he has this voice generator. But it was a process, right? I mean, prior to that, he had to type stuff. And I mean, there's a bunch of things before he managed to get to the voice that he had in the last couple of years. Undeterred by his limitations, right? He actually used this new communication tool to finish the book that became this great bestseller. In 1988, he finished A Brief History of Time, which is trying to explain sort of, you know, the existence of the universe. And he published it and it became, you know, the top of the bestseller list in the UK and US for months. And today, right, sold millions and millions of copies. And I think, you know, same with us, right? I mean, just trying to put some perspective to Hawking's life, right? When we face obstacles, in his case, he couldn't talk. First, he had a life-threatening disease. Now he lost his voice. But he figured out a way, you know, in spite of the disability and the communication issues, how do you figure out, okay, I need to finish this book. I really want to get this out. You know, how do I go about overcoming these obstacles, being undeterred, being resolute in purpose and mission, and relentless in terms of obstacles to succeed, right? And I think it teaches us some good lessons on success, right? Because I think it comes to people, everyone has obstacles. I mean, we look at all these guys, oh, you're so successful. But if you look back, there's always been some obstacle. I mean, you wouldn't want a life that Stephen Hawking had. I don't think I want to have life-threatening disease and not be able to talk. And in spite of that, being able to carve out a name, being so significant in the field of science, you know.
All right. So, yeah, so he's known for his significant contribution to science. So tell us about those and what we can learn from them.
Yeah, I think one of his most significant contribution is to help us understand the universe. He worked very closely with this Sir Roger Penrose, a mathematical physicist, actually, to show that Einstein's general theory of relativity suggested time and space would have their beginning in this Big Bang and ultimately come back to, you know, this whole black hole theory. Again, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to go into much of this depth. But in 1974, in collaboration with theoretical physicist Jacob Bekenstein, he actually showed that black holes aren't actually black. Empty voids that simply retain all the information they collect. Rather, they are thermically created to emit subatomical particles. And today, it's known as Hawking radiation, which meant that black holes aren't forever constant. They eventually exhaust themselves and evaporate. So, I mean, it was a significant find at that point in time. And as he explored the universe, he made a profound statement that we can also leverage in business. I really like this statement. He says this: one of the basic rules of the universe is that nothing is perfect. Perfection simply doesn't exist. Without imperfection, neither you nor I would exist. We know that in life, leadership, if you look at life, right, and leadership and all our business dealings, right, nothing is ever perfect. We always aspire for the perfect plan, the perfect thing, but we live in this VUCA world, you know, everything is not permanent. There's no permanent business model or personal structure or, you know, the landscape requires you to be flexible, adaptable, constantly changing, and we cannot be perfectionists. And this is our problem, right? I mean, you reach a point of acceptability, then you have to adapt because the environment changes, context changes. And I think when he says this, you know, basic rules of the universe is that nothing is perfect. I think if we accept it, right, and we say, okay, how can we, in spite of these imperfections, navigate this and be constantly adaptable and flexible? And I think that's one of the rules of the 21st century, right? This VUCA world requires adaptability, flexibility, the ability to be able to navigate, you know, change and understand context. Because when context change, we need to be able to flex ourselves mm-hmm. into that new context. You know?
All right. We'll talk about leadership lessons specific after this. So we're talking about Stephen Hawking, Roshan Tiran from Leadernomics here with me. Stay tuned to Raise Again, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good morning. Frida Liu here is Race Again. Roshan Tiran from Leadernomics. We're talking about leadership lessons from Stephen Hawking. So, you know, we were talking a little bit about his background, his contribution to science and all that. But what are some of the leadership lessons we can learn from the man?
I'm going to try to keep it to about two. But I think it's big ones. And the first one is regarding his curiosity. Mm-hmm. And you know, it starts first, you know, with having a clear purpose. So he, you know, when people ask him what his purpose was, and this is what he said: my goal is simple. It is a complete understanding of the universe, why it is as it is, and why it exists at all. Mm. Right. So I mean, that's his goal. Like, all my life is going to be defined by this. And despite his limitation, or perhaps because of them, right, he started to pioneer new areas in physics, and in the love of science. I mean, he started through his love of science and his tireless curiosity. He managed to uncover really very interesting insights. Right. In 2015, he was lecturing for the BBC, and he said this: I want you to encourage people to imagine and explore the possibilities of science, both the known and the yet as unknown. And he really was really striving people to become curious. Mm. And I was reading a great book recently, Origins by Adam Grant.
Right.
And it's interesting, you know, he's talking about many theoretical stuff, you know, in terms of
sapiens.
Why.
Huh? So Origins or Sapiens? Okay, go on.
No, it's Originals, okay. By Adam Grant. Mm. And he, one of the things he talks about is that curiosity, right? All great entrepreneurs, all great inventors have this innate curiosity. And it's not something that happened by chance. It's something that sometimes is the birth order, you know, because you're forced to be more curious, because all the good occupations are taken by your brother and sister. So you have to be curious and find other things. But sometimes it's how your parents bring them up, you know, in terms of always wanting to ask, to go deeper, to search, don't accept status quo, to don't be happy with the answer that's given, but to really drive down deeper. And whether it's Steve Jobs or whether, you know, your curiosity is why is IBM doing this way? Why? What you mean 3M has a graphic user interface that's so cool? You know, that curiosity, then question, can we do it even better? Can we, you know, explore this? And what's this guy doing? And I think that curiosity, right, is why, you know, when you be curious, I mean, to him, it was the universe. Mm. I'm so curious about, you know, the universe. I mean, sometimes to me, I'm you know, very intrigued by business models, you know, when I say, wow, Jack Ma did that, and wow, why is Ali doing this? In fact, you guys too, right? I mean, I see, you know, why are you guys investing in startups? And I mean, I've seen a lot of interesting things that why? I mean, and not to question, it won't work, because I think the norm is like, that's crazy. Focus on your core, right? I mean, we have very simplistic answers to tame down our curiosity,
right? Right? Well, here's the curiosity, kill the cat, you know, things like that.
And I think Stephen Hawking, you know, it's I think great leaders do this. They always question every assumption. And when you question an assumption, you start to develop new ideas and new beliefs. And when those beliefs are kind of, you know, like taken away, the old beliefs, right? Mm. We are free to say and try and experiment and do new things. And I think that's one of the big barriers we have here in our country. In many companies, we have certain beliefs that are making us act in certain ways.
Right.
And we cannot change those beliefs. And the only way to change it is to be curious, is to say, let me start with a blank piece of paper and let me be curious. And let me ask questions.
What do we say at BFM? Breaking fixed mindsets.
Oh, that's nice.
Right? And that's the thing, right? And to know that you don't know what you don't know.
Absolutely. You don't know what you don't know.
And there's plenty.
I mean, I was in Sabah with the Surya Capital team, and we were talking, right, about you don't know what you don't know, right? Mm. So, I mean, you cannot blame people for, you know, this person's lousy, this person's no good, and so on and so forth. You cannot, right? Because they know what they know and they don't know what they don't know. So you have to give them, and this is where I think the new form of learning is going to be. It's about experiencing new things. It's about contextualizing and so on and so forth.
And I think I've learned so many things this year. And do you have the sense of awe when you, I've just discovered something new? Of course, it's probably been there forever, but it's new to me, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I took a group to China a couple months ago. Mm. And just to show them that every, you know, here's a digital country, right? Even beggars, right? They use mobile phones to beg, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm taking another group in 2 weeks and I'm like, you're going to be surprised because you want to talk about digitizing a country. You want to talk about going technology. So curiosity, it starts with that, right? I mean, when everybody asks questions.
The irony of the beggar with a smartphone.
Yeah, but hey, you know, but it works, right? I mean, it's a cashless society. So okay. Even beggars need to have cash in a digital sense. So that's the first leadership lesson. Mm-hmm. I think the second one is what I call the lust for life.
Right.
And I think many of us sometimes get beaten up by life and we lose that I just love life. You know, that lust thing. I use the word lust because I want it, I gravitate towards. And I think the brilliance of Stephen Hawking, right? It's not just the understanding of his universe, but his lust for life is equally impressive. You know, I'm going to die in 2 years. I'm not. You know, I'm going to figure out a way. You know, and then look, I'm not going to be restricted by the fact that I cannot speak. You know, so what? I may have ALS, right? But hey, I can still figure out a way. You know, let's find a way. Oh, there's this new program that allows me to, you know, type in and talk on my behalf. Okay, great. Let's do it, right? And to live for 55 years, right? In spite of all the limitation, right? That tells you there is a real, real lust for life. I mean, a truly, this is hard, you know, because I mean, you think about it, right? And many people, they rather than like love life, right? They say, all these problems, let me just kill myself. Let me, you know, I can never understand that, you know, because I mean, life is so beautiful. I mean, another group of, we took a group up to Mount Kinabalu, to see that sunset and there's so many beautiful things in life, right? And you say, look, I'm not going to give up on life. I'm going to fight, you know, and disasters may happen. You may lose your business, but you know, you look at Colonel Sanders, right? At 65 years old, no money, no, nothing, you know, and like, but still had the lust for life. And, you know, like, should I kill myself? Because I really, but no, I want to live. And he said, what am I good at? Cooking, chicken. Okay, let's make chicken. And there you go, KFC, right? I mean, and so to me, that is the second big thing that I think we can learn from Hawkins. It's like, and I think if you have those two, right, is to have that curiosity, right? Because curiosity gives you ideas, gives you hope, gives you the ability to see things where nobody else can see, right? And then the thing is, lust for life is I want to live it. I want to live that life. I want to try things, you know. So not just knowing and be curious, but also executing, which is that lust for life. I think that was the two gems that I got out of his life, you know. But
any other gems?
Yeah, I think maybe a bonus one.
Well, thanks.
I think one of the things I was pretty impressed was the fact that he was a mediocre student. I mean, if you think about it, right, many people say that, hey, if I don't do well in my studies, that's it. That's the end, right? He was a guy who was an average student, hardly liked to study, lazy, you know, had all the traits, right? All the traits that, you know, in fact, according to Hawkins, he didn't really learn to read properly until he was 8 years old. No? So we think about, slow readers, right? Among all his classmates, his grades were really very, very, very average. But I think it's not what you are. Kind of, okay, here's how I was. It's what I do at that point to change my trajectory of my life.
Exactly.
And I think at 21, right, he said, look, so I've been average, so what? You know, I'm okay, you know, I got into Oxford, but I'm not that great. But I want to make the second part, even if it's 2 years, right? I want to make the next trajectory of my life worth living, you know. And I've seen many, you know, if you look at Nobel, right, Alfred Nobel, who came out the Nobel Prize, the first trajectory of his life was known as the guy who created dynamite, the guy who was the father of the weapons of mass destruction. And he was, you know, late in life. And he said, look, I'm rich, but that's all meaningless. The next part of my life, I want it to be of significance. You know, I have success, but I really want to get to significance. And I think at any point in life, and he was 21 and he made this different trajectory. And I think all of us have a choice, whether we are 45 or 20 or
93.
12 or 93, right? It's like, let me have a different trajectory.
Right. Let me fix the problem.
Absolutely, right? So I mean, I think if you look at Hawkins and say, you know, yeah, scientist, you know, what is there to learn about leadership, right? But I think if you think about that curiosity, right, the innate curiosity, and I think every business leader should have that, right? That lust for life. I want to execute. I want to do something. I want to make things happen. I just don't want to just be a person that was there, right? And I think the third thing is, at any time, right, there is hope that we can make that trajectory and we can move to that new trajectory in life, you know. And I think I think if we can take this, you know, Monday morning, you know, start it out and say, hey, let's motivate ourselves to say there is hope for us, you know.
There always regardless, is. You know? Final thoughts on this topic.
Yeah, I think his story might be unique in terms of place in history. I'm not sure we'll ever find another Stephen Hawking, you know, the person with that kind of resilience and that kind of determination.
And someone we saw in our lifetime.
Yeah,
right?
In our lifetime, right? And I mean, Liv just passed away in March this year, right? So, but I think every one of us has the ability to achieve far more than what we think we are capable of. I think that's one of our problems. We have this belief that we are not a Stephen Hawking, but I think we are. Deep down, all of us are Stephen Hawking, you know. And I think the journey starts by recognizing our own potential, our inner strengths are far more powerful than any difficulties that we can ever encounter in life. I get very energized, you know.
Right.
You know, reading stories about Stephen Hawking, watching movies about him, and anybody. You know, I mean, I read about Queen Elizabeth, and I was like, oh, this woman, it's amazing. I mean, I'm doing artist now, right? Because my wife said we need to write a book about she teaches in University of Malaya art, right? So I was like, we need to write a book about art, and then I said and leadership, right? And studying this horrible artist, right? Because some of them like mean people, you know. I'm like, but there's stuff to learn from these guys, right? And you get energized, like, wow, they did that, right? And I think, like Stephen, right, we must lust for life, right? We must desire to truly live life to the fullest. Like my favorite person always says, Helen Keller, you know, life is either a daring adventure or nothing. So live it to the fullest, you know, just like Hawking said, lust for life, you know, be curious and anytime you can do it.
And this is a guy, you know, when you talk about there's no hope and all that, this is a guy in a wheelchair, not being able to speak, and you can say that he lust for life.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Thanks for being with us, Roshan Tiran from Leadernomics, talking about leadership lessons from Stephen Hawking, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.